It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is Diary of a Stroke, The Adventures of Herb and Pete by composer and pianist Haskell Small. Set to perform Saturday in Milwaukee as part of his tour called Celebration of Healing. This is Small's first tour since having a stroke 2 years ago. And you can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Haskell, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, we're delighted to have you. When you had this stroke in 2021, did you fear that you may never play the piano again?
Yes, that was one of the first things that occurred to me. I could hardly move my left hand. Basically, I was paralyzed, and I thought my life is over.
But it was not at all. Can you tell us about what you remember about your stroke and in the days after, with as you got into rehab hospital and recovery?
Indeed. Well, when I stepped back and counted my blessings, I was still here to talk about it. Mm. My speech was not affected. My mind more or less intact. And I said to myself, no, I still have a life in front of me. And I will find a way to keep going, keep working. At first, I wrote some music and made some arrangements for Right Hand Alone, mm-hmm. Which you just played a sample of. I might explain a little the title of my piece, The Adventures of Herb and Pete. What does that have to do with a stroke? Essentially, when I was in the rehab hospital, my physical therapist and me came up with the idea of just being a little bit fun with things rather than being too serious. And we gave names to my left hand was Pete. Mm-hmm. And how about your leg? We'll call him Herb. And so they became the stars of my composition, Diary of a Stroke, The Adventures of Herb and Pete.
I wonder, by calling your left hand Pete and your left leg Herb, does that help you become more in tune with your body as you go through recovery, as if you're giving it more attention and more respect?
That's a good way of saying it. Certainly, if nothing else, it added a sense of humor, which one needs in such a life-altering event. Yeah, definitely. I should add also that while I was still in the rehab hospital, realizing that I, do have a life in front of me still, I recalled one of the pieces of music that I've been wanting to learn all my life, the Diabelli variations of Beethoven. Mm. This is a monstrously difficult and beautiful, sublime music that I said, I'm not going to leave this earth until I play this. And so I, ever since, little by little, started to recover use in my left hand and started practicing in earnest the Diabelli, I call it. And I am about to embark on a tour. I'm realizing my dream. I am really thrilled.
We're going to have you perform a little bit for us in just a bit, but I want to reintroduce you. Haskell Small is a pianist and composer, and talking with him ahead of a performance in Wisconsin this week, you can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Haskell, tell us a bit about your life before the stroke. How did you discover classical music, or how did it find you?
That's a good way to put it. Well, early on, my mother was a classically trained pianist, went to Peabody, but she also loved jazz. And that was my first immersion in music, was basically playing by ear, playing jazz, and God forbid, rock and roll.
And you wanted to be a rock star.
I did for a while. And fortunately, that never happened. I went to San Francisco for a while, and in the middle of the 60s, so you can imagine the times. Mm. But while I was there, I also, even though I did not study classical piano early on earnestly at all, I had a couple of sessions with neighborhood piano teachers, and they were all frustrated with me because I didn't want to do what they wanted me to do, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But when I was in San Francisco and getting tired of jamming in basements, getting stoned, I said, I'm going to go knock on the door of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And very fortunately, they hooked me up with somebody who understood where I was coming from. And I started practicing, writing in earnest classical music.
I thought it was so fascinating that you studied under a pianist who had lost their ability to play with one hand for decades. Is it Leon Fleischer?
Yes. Leon Fleischer was a great pianist, known not just for his disability, obviously, but because he was an incredible musician. And I was very fortunate to have him as my teacher for several years. And he would demonstrate during lessons. He had the opposite hand affected. Mm-hmm. He would demonstrate with his left hand, wrapping rings around what I could do with both hands at the time.
Putting you in your place a bit. But so after your stroke, you write and you transcribe pieces of works for the right hand only. I wonder, what did that do to your brain? What effect did it have on your recovery?
Certainly, the effect on the brain was to keep active, to start getting the brain cells in there that were still alive. The ones that got cooked, I'm afraid, were gone. But the human mind is so malleable, so incredibly wonderful design, that it finds ways of rewiring lost functions to new parts of the brain that are still able to function. And so essentially delving myself into things that involve me being active and creative, those exercise those synapses in the brain, and that absolutely helped my recovery as well as my sanity.
Composer and pianist Haskell Small on his journey through stroke rehab, how it connects to his musicianship. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Longtime pianist and composer Haskell Small is set to perform in Milwaukee. We explore how the piano has created new significance in recovering from a stroke 2 years ago. Small's tour is called Celebration of Healing. Be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Haskell, how long did it take you until you felt that you had mostly recovered from your stroke? When did you feel like you again?
Well, it's still a work in progress, but essentially, as soon as I was able to function playing the piano with both hands, which was, I guess, around 3/4 of a year after my stroke, that's when I started to feel a little bit whole again. I'm still hobbling around, and the sensations are not going to come back fully, as I understand it, although the function is there and getting better all the time, and hence I'm on my tour.
Is going on tour in part... Can that be taxing, tiring, or is it exhilarating to be in front of audiences?
Both. Obviously exhilarating, or I wouldn't be doing this. It's thrilling to me to be here, to be doing my thing. And the travel, I'm leaving in a couple of hours from now. Packing my suitcase last night, I was realizing, what am I getting myself into? This is a lot of lugging things around. I'm on a roll. I'm excited with playing this specific piece of music, which has been a lifelong dream. It's a spiritual journey for me to have immerse myself in this great music and to be able to share it with people very soon. I'm looking forward to being in your area.
Yes, yes. Well, with no further ado, you'll be playing Beethoven's The Diabelli Variations Saturday here in Milwaukee. And from what I understand, this is a massive piece that it can take quite a while to play, and this has been your goal in recovery, to play this. What is it like to hit this mile marker?
It's very gratifying. It's certainly massive is the word. Depending on what I ate for breakfast, it can last anywhere from 50 minutes to an hour and 20 minutes with all the repeats. It's a huge work, all based on a little ditty written by this obscure Italian composer, Anton Diabelli. He sent around this theme of his to all the composers of the day in Vienna, asking them to contribute a variation on his theme. At first, Beethoven dismissed the whole idea. He thought this theme was a piece of dust, not worthy of whatever. But then he thought about it by nature of it being so simple-minded relatively. To Beethoven, it opened up, thousands, just worlds of ways of using that material to make many different moods and to create this enormous piece with this arc from beginning to end. Beethoven told Mr. Diabelli, I'm not going to do just one variation. I'm sorry, I'm doing 33. I like it, I love it.
Take this. would you play an excerpt for us, if you please?
I would love to. It's early in the morning, so forgive me, but here goes. I'm just going to play literally 30 seconds the theme of Diabelli's, Beethoven's opening of the work, without the repeats. Let me move my chair over to the
Yeah,
piano.
get ready and comfortable. We're here.
Okay. All right, I'm here. It works. Can you hear me?
Indeed, we can.
Okay, here we go.
So much for that. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
How do you feel about building on someone else's work? Because that's what's kind of going on here in Diabelli Variations.
I'm enjoying the I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but the idea of performing this piece of Beethoven that he has fueled my recovery. I'm grateful for for this. It's ironic that the I understand that people that have training as musicians or athletes, I'm told they have the best chances of recovering from a stroke more quickly, that it involves the discipline to practice, to focus on what's needed. And so certainly that in itself has been something I've enjoyed using Mr. Beethoven's music for.
Yes. And you've been so disciplined as a pianist, from what I understand, practicing hours a day. That inner drive and determination must also help in rehab after a stroke.
Absolutely. Essentially, this was a lifesaver for me. I could easily have become depressed. I said to my wife, my career, my life is over. And then this is what has kept me focused and really important.
The tour being called Celebration of Healing, I would imagine you could have called it many different things. What are you hoping people learn from attending one of your shows?
Well, I like to think they might pick up on the notion that if there's something you really want to do, you can do it. Go for it. The human mind is powerful. It is so wired to be at our service if we can only tap into it. And essentially, that was what I became determined to do early on. And I think the in itself, the determination is part of what helped me to recover and to, with 24/7 practicing, obviously, also to put all this together. I only played a little ditty of it for you there now, but this goes on
It was
for.
just a nibble. Yes. In our final moments together here, I'm wondering, do you still feel like you have breakthroughs as a pianist, that you have these aha moments with the music, that you're still very close to it?
That's a good question. Absolutely. I mean, all the time, as a performing artist of any kind, I think there's always new discoveries, new angles, new ways of experiencing things that one can discover. I have felt since working on this specific piece of music, as well as in general, that I'm getting better in some ways than I was before my stroke. By dint of having to practice my left hand extra slowly, just as one of the
It really makes,
therapists.
yeah, it makes you come really to understand in a minute way about the music. Haskell Small, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Set to perform Saturday in Milwaukee, you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We hear from nurses in Madison who are urging the state health department to investigate patient safety concerns. First, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about two Appleton sisters and their love of reading.
Beth Lowe grew up spending most of her free time immersed in books. Now living with her sister, Mai J. Lo Lee, she has come to find that her love for reading has had a positive influence on her family, despite how her parents felt about it. The sisters talked with one another about that experience as part of a StoryCorps mobile tour stop in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
My name is Beth Lowe. I am 49 years old.
My name is Mai J. Lo Lee. I am 43 years old today. So Beth, how does it feel being the older sister and not having an older somebody to go to?
You know, it's funny you say that because on the way over here, we're referencing that you and the younger sisters each had a sibling, almost a sibling, a cousin, a playmate that you can hang out with.
Talk boys,
yes,
talk girls.
Talk boys, yeah, talk makeup gossip, as you transition into your preteen, teen years. And I was just saying, I have nobody in our culture, and we are Hmong. I'm the oldest, so there's never that effort to get friends or people that you can talk to outside of your familial setting. So it was quite lonely growing up being the oldest girl in the family.
Do you think that's why you like books so much?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me why you like to read so much and what do books mean for you?
You know what? I think if you ask anybody who loves books, it's just you get into the page and you become the characters. You become where you go where they go. You feel what they feel.
You live with me now. You've been living with my family for 2 years, and I cannot tell you like how you've normalized reading for my daughter.
Yes.
Because whereas like with her peer group, enjoying reading is not seen as cool. And I try to do it in front of her all the time, but for her, when she saw you do it like during your free time and not watch TV, not use your phone, where you always had a book in your bag or you had a book in every room or a book, like for her, she's like, I can put a book in every free space.
Yeah.
You know, and I just really appreciate that because for you living with us, that's really normalized, like very for her, like it's normal to read. Everybody should read, but it's okay to read whatever you want.
Right.
You know, and for her to like know that that's like normal. Because, you know, in our household, that was not normal.
Right.
We used to get yelled at for reading.
Well, as you remember, our mother would literally come take the books out of our hands and rip it out. And I remember a couple of, I think it was last week, you were asking Senya to go do something. And she's like, Mama, I'm reading. And I think you just silently closed the door and just walked out because what can you say when your child is like, what do you mean I can't? I'm reading.
I felt so triggered when I was like, go do your chores and stop reading. And I thought, trauma.
Trauma,
you know,
right.
Like I was like, I had to go journal. I had to go write about like, how do I feel? What is that? Because I remember my mom and our parents yelling at us about reading too much or that this wasn't going to be a skill set that like brides needed.
Right.
You know, and I had to explain to her, like, just so you know, Grandma and Grandpa were not encouraging of us reading. You know, and I remember when you went off to college, my dad had a book burning out in the farm because he was like, what the hell am I going to do with all these thousands of books?
Yeah.
And then he just had this big bonfire and just threw all the books in there. And I didn't realize like what it meant at the time or all of that stuff. And I just thought, he burnt books because he didn't want the younger kids to read it or to be influenced by it or to, like, go to college.
I think you and I, we snuck it in wherever we could. Thinking back to my youth, that was one of the rebellious things that I could have done in terms of from a cultural perspective. Sadly, yeah, our mother would never say, we have a daughter who reads. It's always, I have a daughter who reads. So yes, there's that hint of shame in that. And I appreciate you saying that about me influencing your daughter in a small capacity.
Oh, no.
That's beautiful.
That's a big capacity. You know what a big capacity that is.
That was Beth Lowe and Mai J. Lo Lee of Appleton. Their interviews were recorded at StoryCorps, a national initiative to record and collect stories of everyday people. Excerpts were selected and produced by Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of WPR and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A group of nurses at UW Health escalate concerns about patient care, submitting more than 100 reports to the state health department urging investigations amid an ongoing labor dispute. And that is according to Service Employees International Union Wisconsin. Call in with a question, share thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Mariah Clark is an emergency room nurse at UW Health. Mariah, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Colin Gillis with us, nurse at University Hospital. Colin, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Colin, let's start with you. As members of the UW Health Nurses Union gathering around 100 safety violation forms, what incidents are being reported in these documents?
These documents report incidents where nurses felt that they were placed in a situation that just wasn't providing the patient the safest care possible. And usually it's like some of the patterns we've observed are situations where staffing isn't adequate, where nurses are expected to work up to 16-hour shifts, where nurses with inadequate experience are given roles that should require more experience than what they have. And all of these things are what contribute to a really spiraling crisis of understaffing, turnover, and burnout.
Do any of these accounts and the reports potentially violate federal regulations?
I don't know. I'm going to leave that one for DHS to help us figure out.
Mariah, staffing levels at UW Health are a point of contention between nurses and the administration. How do you observe staffing levels affecting patient safety?
Well, from my perspective in the ER, I see it when we don't have enough time to spend with our patients, either in terms of doing a good, thorough evaluation of their medical condition, or in terms of not being able to spend enough time with them doing things like toileting or education regarding a new medical diagnosis or equipment that they may be going home with or being admitted with. I've heard from several of my nursing colleagues in other departments that it impacts them as well, especially when it comes to the turnover and the new nurses orienting other new nurses too soon and sort of the loss of institutional knowledge. So, you know, you can be the most intelligent, best trained, most meticulous, detail-oriented, compassionate nurse possible, but it comes down to minutes at the bedside. You know, if you don't have more than a few minutes to spend because you're spread too thin due to staffing, then all of that excellence barely matters. And patients get the care they require, but not necessarily the quality care that they deserve and that they expect from us.
When you examine employee turnover, there are reports that it's especially bad in inpatient surgical as well as in the ER where you are. A UW Health spokesperson says 250 registered nurses were hired over the last year. How is turnover where you are?
Well, I know the inpatient OR definitely suffered. The ER suffered really badly a couple of years ago. We lost almost half our staff in a, 6 to 12 month period. But now it's mostly turnover. Like, we have a lot of new hires, and that's wonderful because we need the people. But again, when half of the new hires are brand new grads with no previous nursing experience, you are, I don't want to say diluting, but you're changing the levels of expertise that you have in the department, because we were all new one time, but we were also all new when we had a mix of real veterans. Now, if you make it to 5 years in the department, you are one of the real veterans instead of the real veterans being, you know, 15, 20, 30 year nurses that just have depths of knowledge that go so far beyond.
Colin, UW Health CEO Dr. Alan Kaplan says the nurses union is using concerns of patient safety issues as a bargaining tool in to increase staff pay. What is your response to that?
That's just that does not reflect what we've been trying to do with our campaign. And safety has always been our top priority. It's not like we're just bringing up patient safety now. The thing that inspired me to get involved in our campaign when it started back in 2019 was my commitment to patient safety. So when we take things to DHS, we're really just escalating in the way that I would escalate up the levels of authority at the hospital when I'm trying to care for a patient in an emergency situation. If you feel like one provider is not responding adequately enough, you go to the one above them, and you go above them. And that's what's happening here.
Can you provide some context on this documentation? How common is it for nurses to submit this form about working conditions and patient safety?
So the hospital has an internal reporting system, and the documentation that we've provided nurses has never been intended to replace that. We've gotten hundreds of these reports, and they tend to be in places where the safety concerns that nurses are seeing are rooted in administrative decisions. And so they feel like using the hospital's internal reporting system isn't going to be an effective way of addressing that root cause, right? If the administration made a decision and you're saying that decision is the root cause to the administration, it's not as effective as taking it to someone who isn't already invested in that decision.
Colin Gillis and Mariah Clark, they're registered nurses at UW Health in Madison, as we explore the concerns of some nurses about patient care. Call in with a question, share your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As nurses at UW Health in Madison escalate concerns about patient safety incidents, seeking the State Department of Health Services to intervene, we hear directly from nurses on this issue with UW Health Emergency Room Nurse Mariah Clark and Colin Gillis, registered nurse at University Hospital. Colin, with a question, you can add your views, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mariah, some of the complaints submitted to state regulators concern a team of critical care nurses known as SOS or Save Our Shift nurses. And last month, nurses said UW Health announced it would eliminate the team. How important is this team?
Oh, this team is incredibly important. They're called Save Our Shift for a reason, because they are a team of highly skilled critical care nurses who can work across patient care areas, different units. They can shore up staffing gaps and respond to emergency situations. We've been advocating for that team to get strengthened or expanded for years. It's actually one of the things that has gotten called out specifically by the Magnet governing body, who does certifications on nursing excellence. And they help immeasurably on the inpatient floors. I keep hearing time and again, and I know how much they've impacted, you know, the ER in years past. So their loss would be terrible. And, you know, on top of that, it was another decision handed down kind of from the top, from administration, without any real input or without taking into consideration what the nurses were saying about our needs from the bedside level.
Colin, a UW Health spokesperson told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the role of SOS nurses is now being filled through its critical care float team. Do you see this change affecting patients?
Yeah, what makes the SOS team so special is that their one job, their one mission in the hospital is to save our shift. So they were set apart. They were their own unit. And one of the administrative changes that actually inspired nurses to start our campaign way back in 2019 was the merger of the SOS team with the critical care float pool. And that merger meant that the hospital could pull nurses out of SOS in order to staff patient beds. And that means whenever one of the units which requires critical care floats is short-staffed, then we're taking away from the SOS team. And that has eroded the protections that the SOS team can provide. And like in terms of patient safety, those nurses are like the special forces of the hospital. They drop into any situation and without ever losing their cool, they know exactly what to do. And they often run the show in an emergency situation. So I think I, like a lot of other nurses, just can't imagine providing the safest, highest quality care without a resource like SOS.
And you have experience as a charge nurse overseeing operations of a unit, but also working alongside a team. How does that experience inform your views on staffing?
So as a charge nurse, my responsibility is to manage the flow of patients on and off the unit and make sure that those patients are safely cared for. But I'm also kind of like the mentor to all the nurses on the unit at any given time. And that gives me a unique perspective here, right? Like mm-hmm. I see nurses come to me when they have a problem, and I see and I've seen nurses suffer from that problem that Mariah was talking about earlier, where there's just more than you can do in a given shift. You have more tasks than you can reasonably accomplish when you're working the floor. Because there aren't enough nurses to go around. And that experience, spending 12 hours trying to care for patients when there's more care needed than you can provide as one person, that really, that breaks nurses down. And that's where I see promising new nurses start to turn into burned out nurses who are questioning not only their decision to work in an inpatient setting, which is a challenging, it's a challenging job, but they're questioning their decision to become a nurse and work in healthcare at all. And that breaks my heart, and it makes me really scared about the future, because the need for nurses is only growing. And we already have a staffing crisis, but we also have an aging population and a growing population.
Talking with UW Health nurses Colin Gillis and Mariah Clark about their concerns over patient care and hospital administration. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Mariah, we heard from Andrew in Madison. Call to ask if the nurses union is also advocating for the UW Medical Foundation nurses.
Oh, absolutely. UW has an interesting organizational construction, and basically we want all of the nurses that are possible to be in the union if they want to be in the union. So we've definitely been fighting for everyone, and we just have to figure out things on the organizational and regulatory end that honestly are a little beyond my ken. That's where I fall onto the I am a nurse, not an administrator and not a regulator. I don't know all of the exact differences, but we're definitely fighting for that. And honestly, once we get the nurses unionized, as we were before, we'll be able to help other groups in the hospital get organized if they'd like to as well.
In the little over a year since averting a strike, what has the relationship been like between nurses and administration since the agreement? And we have a little less than a minute.
Well, you know, we meet every other month for agreed upon meet and discuss meetings, and we continue to try and work collaboratively with the administration with varying levels of success.
Colin, this meet and discuss for over a year, is that productive?
So meet and discuss has not been as productive as we hoped it would be. When we came to an agreement and averted a strike at the and in last fall, I think nurses agreed to that deal because they believed that the new relationship between the administration and the union would allow for us to establish real, tangible changes that would improve our workplace. I'm sorry to say that we haven't gotten there yet.
That hasn't come to fruition. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us, Kate. It's great to be back on the show.
Mariah Clark and Colin Gillis, they're registered nurses with UW Health in Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.